Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour's Editorial Review. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network as an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour's Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Editorial Review, the Gordon Law School, then go to my website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events in the light of Bible prophecy, biblical law, and scriptural history. Stay tuned for tonight's special reports right after this message. All right, tonight's message is, let me remind you that the Editorial Review will be terminated on Friday, May 28th. We're doing that because I'm going to expand the services that we provide on the Law Hour, and I put on the Editorial Review as a service to Truth Radio to take up the space. We needed somebody to take up an hour's worth of time, do 7 hours worth of broadcasting, and we didn't have a talk show host to do that. So I said, well, I'll do that, and I think now the time has come for me to move on. And I want to do the Law Hour, and I want to expand our service, our broadcast, to AM and FM radio stations around the world. A lot of AM and FM radio stations would like to carry our program, but they can't because of the quality problem. And while the quality problem is pretty good, I think we can boost it up to a number one. So what we are doing here is getting rid of the analog telephone connection, which is the way we broadcast the Law Hour today. See, I'm on my telephone right now broadcasting live through an uplink to a satellite which goes out to California and Pomo, California, and is downloaded to the radio network, Truth Radio Network, and then it goes through the board and the processing there, and then it's uplinked again to the KU Band radio satellite, and then the Internet. And then it goes out worldwide. Well, when you uplink and downlink and move it around, it loses quality, and the quality isn't that good anyway because we don't have digital phone service here. So to solve that problem, we need to go to CD quality. So we put in a new recording outfit here, and we're recording. I've just completed 21 broadcasts, which will start on Sunday, May the 30th. So beginning Sunday, May 30th, you should start hearing better quality, and it should be broadcast quality for all of you AM and FM radio stations, and you'll pick that up. If you want more information, just call the law school, and we'll tell you where to go. You can get from Wes Perkins down in Austin, Texas. We'll send the discs to Wes. Wes will then put them on the Internet, and they can be downloaded off of the Internet, off of Wes Perkins' computer. In compact disc, MP3, and other file format so that it'll be broadcast quality. And, of course, the program then goes to our archives in Columbus, Ohio. And the archives over in Ohio will carry the broadcast, a new broadcast every day. So we'll have a new and different broadcast, a program or topic, 365 programs a year, an hour a day, 7 days a week, on compact disc. So that's the plan. So let's get on to Kitco. Now, where we're at is with a neutron bomb, and it's called derivatives. Derivatives. You may not have heard that term. Let's take a look at it and see where we're going with this. When we're given the horror in which governments and central bankers view deflation, after having gone through it in the 1930s, hyperinflation is the more probable outcome. Alan Greenspan must lay awake every night ever fearful of his worst nightmare taking place, and that is a derivative collapse or mishap, which is daisy chain linked between the money center banks, brokerage firms, financial intermediaries, GSEs, and hedge funds. Derivatives, which are closely linked to all credit instruments, are the $150 trillion neutron bomb that hovers over the world's financial system. What will cause the bomb to detonate is anyone's guess. It could be widening credit spreads, a large bond default, an unhedged position, a geopolitical event, or something as simple as a bad trade that turns liquid through a liquidity trap. No one really has the answer to that. However, the financial markets have become one large minefield, and the more that it is traversed, the more likely that a mine is going to be detonated. Now, investors have been very slow to adapt to the new economics. While consumers have been quick to recognize the inflation that now pervades their daily lives, as investors, these same consumers have been very slow to adapt to the new inflationary environment. Money is still pouring into bond funds, stock index funds, cash, and other paper assets. Albeit at a much slower rate than they were, they're still pouring all of this money. Americans are pouring their money into paper entities. Well, until recently, selling pressure has been absent in the markets, nor have rising energy prices translated into energy stocks becoming super bid. For instance, despite gushing profits in $40 oil, energy stocks remain grossly undervalued. Investors are now willingly paying 129 times earnings for Yahoo, 68 times earnings to own NASDAQ stocks, but they're unwilling to invest in energy at 10 times earnings and dividend yields of 3% or more. The market cap of NASDAQ is $3.3 trillion. It's overvalued. And when this thing comes unhinged, you won't get 1 cent on the dollar out of your paper investment. You won't get a penny on the dollar, not even 1%. But sitting right now, a few of you could cash out into gold, into silver, into toilet paper, into anything, and collect 100 cents on the dollar of the paper value that you have. But the longer you hang on to the paper value, the more certain it is to be eroded, because hyperinflation eliminates all debt. In the end, there will be no more debt. We'll just inflate it right out of existence. Now, refusing to cross over, these investors have been very slow to adapt, and financial institutions have also been slow to adapt. Institutions haven't been any different than Joe Sixpack. Devoid of any original thinking outside of the box, managers have relentlessly pursued tech stocks regardless of whether they're making any money. Most funds have become closet index funds, with fund managers holding the top 10 stocks in the S&P 500. That's why companies such as Microsoft, GE, Intel, IBM, and Cisco carry such high multiples. Index funds must own and buy them. Fund managers pursue them in an effort to index the returns of their fund, while momentum investors continuously trade in and out of them. The table below shows most of the top S&P 500 companies trading at extremely high multiples. It doesn't matter whether you look at the PE multiples, price to book, or price to sales, or even market caps. With the exception of ExxonMobil, they all remain dangerously overpriced. Now, all of this leads to the point of my essay. Investors have failed to cross over and adjust to the asset allocation of their portfolios. In an inflationary environment with $40 oil and $6.50 for natural gas, which of the above stocks would make the most money? Well, investors and fund managers haven't connected the pieces of the inflationary puzzle together. In an imaginary poll, how would the typical fund manager or investor respond to an inflationary environment where the true rate of inflation is running 8 to 10% given the following choices? Money market or bond fund, certificate of deposit paying 2%, S&P 500 index fund, gold, silver, oil, or other commodities. Well, most fund managers would buy Cisco, while the average investor would invest in an S&P 500 index fund, a bond fund, or a certificate of deposit, depending on age and risk. In fact, as already mentioned, most of these funds have become closet index funds. The last place you'd find fund managers buying would be in the precious metals or commodity sector. Now, given the cash in the metals stocks recently, it's been shown that most mutual fund and hedge fund managers have been big sellers of precious metals or precious metal stocks. This explains a good deal of the rapid fall as the funds unloaded their portfolios. Following the sector, I've noticed not only an increase in short selling, but also heavy selling by most mutual fund companies. Now, like lemmings following the pigs to the slaughter, they have joined each other into a fray of selling. While they have unloaded their commodity-related stocks, the mutual fund companies have loaded up on the big cap and small speculative stocks, taking their own cash positions to near zero. Cash positions, near zero. Fund managers want to believe in the recovery and that we're going back to the good old days. Their internal biases have blinded them from any objective analysis of the present runaway inflationary environment. You still find funds loaded up on tech stocks, financials, and cyclical stocks with sector weighings as high as 15 to 20%. It would be rare if you ever found a fund with 15 to 20% sector weighings in energy, precious metals, base metals, food, or other commodity-related companies. Everyone wants to believe in the illusion of the 90s that Wall Street trumpets the increase in sales and earnings in the tech sector. And yet, as high-tech strategist Fred Hinckley points out in his May letter, most of IBM's revenue growth didn't come from unit volume growth, but from currency gains from a lower dollar. And Hickey further highlights the fact that in the technology world, there is just too much capacity and supply. Hickey sums it up succinctly. The bulls all believe they're in a bull market, yet they've lost money in 2000 and 2001, 2002, and in 2004 up to the present day. Something's very wrong, and they haven't figured it out yet. And when they do, panic will ensue, and the bear market will complete its unfinished work. Hickey expects the dollar to go lower, so he is buying more Newmont Mining and Pan American Silver. He also owns the short-term government bonds of Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. Hang on, we've got the gold wars coming up after we get back from this break. Hang on, we'll talk about gold right after this. Emma. All right, we're back, everyone. You're listening to the Law Hours Editorial Review. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service in the public interest. And all of these Editorial Review programs are archived for your listening convenience on the Internet at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And starting on Sunday, May the 30th, the Law Hour will be heard at its usual time, 8 o'clock Central Time, 6 o'clock Pacific. Truth Radio will continue to broadcast, except that instead of being transmitted live over my analog telephone, we will send these programs on compact disc, one-hour program on each compact disc, to the network. The network will then play those one program a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And they'll be on compact disc, and the quality will be AM and FM quality. I think it's up around 32, I don't know, something or other. I'm not up to the, you know, the MP3 and the 32 megabytes and 37 gigabytes. And that's all over my head, and I don't, I'm still doing my arithmetic on 3x5 cards and a calculator. And I've been doing business like that for about 50 years now, and it's worked fine for me. I'm not much into computers and technology, and I don't mind admitting it. But we do have a fine staff, Wes Perkins down in Austin, Texas, and Larry Harris. And we're going to send the discs to them, and they're going to put it on the air, along with Richard Palmquist, Truth Radio. And we're going to see if we can't put the Law Hour on AM and FM affiliates around the world. All right, with that much in mind, let's take a look at the mutual fund cash levels and the gold wars. Now, at a time when the PPI and the CPI, that's the Consumer Price Index, are all headed higher, a time when gasoline prices are going up every week, when food prices are going up at an annual rate of 22%, oil is at $40 a barrel, soybeans are selling at $982 a ton, and cocoa and copper and wheat and ignore all at all-time highs, investors should begin to adjust their portfolios, but they're not. Now, allocating a portion of their investment portfolio to foreign commodity country bonds or energy, food, base metals, and or precious metals would be in order, but instead, investors have bought into the mindless drivel coming from Wall Street and the financial press that tells them inflation is benign and as long as the Fed raises rates slowly, stocks will continue to do well. Well, numerous articles have appeared recently calling for the death of gold as an investment. According to the latest thinking among the herd, rising interest rates are bad for precious metals. I refer the reader to last week's chart of interest rates and gold prices from the 1970s. As those charts show, as interest rates rose, so did the price of gold. In fact, the price of gold and silver rose in spectacular fashion. I got to pause here for a moment. Why has the price of gold declined from 4.25 down to 380 or 85? The answer is the powers that be have forced gold down by staging fictitious sales. The big central banks write articles, and they have the media press write articles about the death of gold. And then the Bank of Austria sells 25 tons of gold. Immediately, Joe Sixpack says, oh my God, if they sell 25 tons of gold, it'll drive the price down, so he sells his gold, which does indeed drive the price of gold down. It's not the sale of the Bank of Austria driving it down. It's Joe Sixpack believing that the Bank of Austria's sale is going to drive it down. Because, see, the Bank of Austria, the last time I saw, had 800 tons of gold. Or at 80 tons, I forgot now which it was. And they said, well, we're going to sell 25 tons of gold. They did. They sold it to the Bank of England. That gold doesn't get out into the marketplace where you and I buy it. They sold the 25 tons to England. England sold the 25 tons to Germany. Germany sold the 25 tons to Italy. Italy sold the 25 tons back to Austria. And when it was all said and done, Austria ended up with 85 tons of gold. All of the central banks are adding to their gold reserves. There is a physical gold shortage. There's a surplus of paper gold, but there's no surplus of paper of physical gold. And when you buy gold, you take possession. And when you hear somebody offering you some bargain basement price for gold and silver, don't you believe it. That's nonsense. That's just somebody seeking to separate you from your money. There are no bargains in gold. You pay 100 cents on the dollar. In fact, you pay 104 cents on the dollar for gold. Now, if you want to buy cheap gold, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But then don't write me a letter and tell me about how you've been snickered and taken advantage of. Now this is the time to put on your sober hat. This is not the time to be investing in wild speculation. This bubble is about to burst. Now, going on, they pointed out here that numerous articles have appeared recently calling for the death of gold as an investment, and according to the latest thinking among the herd, rising interest rates are bad for precious metals. They're not. Rising interest rates are good for precious metals. Now, remember, the herd is selling gold, selling precious metals, selling commodities, and commodities companies betting on the speculative stocks, you know, the big ones. Google is going public, and we're going to get in on the big profits. Oh, I don't know. I'm not telling you that there aren't going to be big profits. Heck, you know, they might pull the fat out of the fire, and you guys may make a killing. But do you really think this is the time to be gambling? You want to speculate, dude? Now, instead of focusing on rapidly rising energy and other commodity prices, the financial press flippantly dismisses rising PPI and CPI reports by routinely stripping away and playing down the food and energy component. Don't you think analysts, anchors, reporters, and fund managers have to drive to work, eat food, live in a home, and pay taxes like all the rest of us? Hey, let's assume, for the sake of argument, that Dan Rather and the rest of them, maybe they inhabit the same earth that you and I do. Well, don't you think Dan Rather and the rest of these media moguls should have noticed by now that the macro environment is not characterized by low inflation, or that independent inflation targeting central banks are the norm, or that financial risk is negligible? You know, inflation is all around them in the form of asset bubbles and stocks, real estate, bonds, mortgages. And in rising commodity prices, especially energy, the financial environment is strung with risks. What else would you call $150 trillion worth of derivatives worldwide in a bond carry trade and the average participant leveraged 20 to 1? This isn't just risk. This is financial insanity. I don't know what keeps it going, but I do know this. I'm not going to invest in it. Now, let's just take ExxonMobil. You know, they're paying 3%. You know, I've been a businessman since I was 11 years old. I have never worked for 3%. If you think that I would give you $1,000 of my money for you to go out and invest in risk for 30 bucks, you're out of your mind. When I invest $1,000, I expect to make 500, or I wouldn't let it out of my sight. The truth be known, when I invest $1,000, I expect to make $1,000. But if you told me you were going to pay me 5%, 10%, 15%, you know, I'd tell you, I know that you're lying to me and I know you're crazy. But you know, people with too much money and too little intelligence invest their money in gold mines in the Atlantic and Pacific trenches. And it seems to be easy to sell people paper, very difficult to sell them tangibles, you know, like commodities and gold. Now, sir, I'm going to take possession. When I buy, I'm going to take possession of it. I'm going to put my money in toilet paper. I'm going to put my money in gold and silver. By golly, I want to own that cow, and I want that cow staked out here in my field. I'm not going to trust my cow in somebody else's pasture or my money in somebody else's bank account. Not with people that are leveraged out 20 to 1 and $150 trillion in derivatives out here. And these people call this investment? Itko hit the nail on the head. This is financial insanity. It isn't new. It's been going on for the last 40 years. It's just reached such an absurd level that it's hard to believe that the professionals can actually believe in it. It's time to start connecting the dots. Gold and silver represent money, the only money that isn't another person's liability. And it has served as money for long periods of time, and a longer period of time than any of today's wallowing fiat currency. Now, to suggest that the inflationary environment is benign is explicitly illustrative of the financial press's ignorance when it comes to inflation. They simply aren't connecting the dots between the prices of things that they have to buy in order to live and expanding and runaway credit system. Nor are they helped in any fashion by the originators of today's inflation, which springs from the expansion of credit from the financial system, whether through central banks and the affiliated banking system or through the financial market. Inflation is inflation, no matter who puts it out there. Our financial elites constantly throw out such mindless statistics that show inflation rates of 1.7% year over year. And yet debt in this country has expanded by over $15 trillion in the last 6 years. $15 trillion in the last 6 years. Investors can put it together when it comes to rising real estate prices, but they haven't been able to connect the dots when it comes to precious metals and energy. Now, they've made no connection to inflation, rising energy, and metals prices, and how that translates into rising profits for commodity producers. Instead, they buy Cisco. Well, the financial press, from the Financial Times to the New York Times and Money Magazine, features stories of how to invest during a period of rising interest rates. The word inflation hardly comes up since rising inflation is considered to be temporary. What do you think the asset bubbles of the 80s and 90s were? Here's what I expect to see. Down here on the streets, the average investor, the true realization of inflation will have to be experienced firsthand through deflating bubbles in the stock and bond markets, and in real estate. What I expect to happen is that the Fed will try to raise interest rates. I don't believe that they're going to get very far before the stock market and the economy begin to roll over as the stock market is doing now. When the real panic will begin to set in and we will see the central banks reverse course and begin to reinflate. More importantly, like Federal Reserve policy during the 70s under then Fed Chairman Arthur Burns. The Fed is targeting interest rates rather than the money supply. The markets will simply adapt if they don't blow up first. A 2% federal funds rate does nothing to stop inflation. Curbing money and credit by raising bank reserves and raising interest rates high enough where it becomes no longer profitable to borrow. Well, money to speculate would curb financial credit and assets. These asset bubbles are due to collapse. The only problem with this kind of policy response is that the economy and the financial markets are far more geared than when Paul Volcker applied the brakes to credit and money in the late 70s and early 80s. The financial markets could not handle the stress on account of its leverage. And that's why history shows inflating one's way out of a credit bubble has been the preferred policy of choice from Roman emperors to prime ministers and American presidents. So you can expect that that's what's coming. Now, with debt levels this high, the only policy option is to inflate or die. The other alternative is debt-cleansing depression. And instead of a benign macro environment, as the financial press would suggest, I see a malignant tumor. All of its symptoms are listed below, taken from my March 1st market wrap-up collision course. You got seven headwinds of inflation: lax monetary policy, expanding government budgets, rapidly rising government deficits of GDP and growing. It's 5%, by the way. The rising government deficit is now 5% of the gross domestic product. A falling currency, war, and expanding military budgets, soaring oil and commodity prices, and this time it's structural and protectionism. Now we've got seven headwinds of inflation. We've had the structural fundamentals for gold and silver. Hang on. We'll take a look at gold and silver's bright fundamentals as opposed to paper's dark clouds. Hang on. We'll be right back. All right. We're back for the closer. You're listening to The Editorial Review. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service in the public interest, and your support of Truth Radio and of our advertisers and sponsors is very important to us. So for more information about Truth Radio Network programming, please go to our website, truthradio.com. Again, that's truthradio.com. And remember, the Truth Radio Network is a private volunteer organization established as a private charitable trust for the purpose of exercising and defending free speech. Truth Radio is not a 501c3 tax-exempt institution. Donations are not tax-deductible. And if they were tax-deductible, we wouldn't be free to tell the truth, so we rely instead upon the financial support of your listening audience, which helps us pay for our satellite time, internet audio streaming, and overhead costs. So we want to thank you very much for that financial support. Remember, that comes through your donations that you make here to Truth Radio, P.O. Box 344, Napomo, California, 93444. Again, that's Truth Radio, Post Office Box 344, Napomo, NIPOMO, California, 93444. I want to thank you very much, each and every one of you that have donated to Truth Radio this month. It has taken a great financial burden off of all of us here at Truth Radio. The operating expenses aren't very much. It's only $4,000 a month. You know, if you got a couple 300 people donating $20 a month, it doesn't take very much, just a little bit from many hands. Many hands make light work. Now, this month, if you haven't done it already, why don't you send a $20 bill for donation and ask Richard Palmquist for one of those radios from China. It's a digital AM/FM shortwave band radio. Richard sent me one, said, here, try this out and see what you think of it. And I did. I tried it out, and it's better than our old shortwave radio that I had when we were a kid. I mean, it's just as clear as a bell. I can listen to the English language broadcasts from Beijing, China, Russia, Havana, Cuba, the BBC in London, all over the world. It's really a dynamite little radio, and I think $20, the suggested price for it, is super. If you can afford more, send a little more. If you don't, why, be sure to ask for it. Here's tonight's wise old saying. You know, experience is a marvelous thing because it enables you to recognize a mistake when you make it the second time. All right, here's the fundamentals of gold. Gold and silver's bright fundamentals are these. The producer hedge book reductions and decline in central bank gold sales. Reflation, a declining U.S. dollar, increased investment demand and decreasing supply, low negative interest rate, volatile geopolitical storms, and resource scarcity. So just ask yourself, as to the constant mantra echoed so often in the financial press that gold is dead, or that the macro environment is healthy, and that central banks have inflation in check, I would ask the reader, take some time and think about it. What have you read or heard versus what you are experiencing firsthand? Do you find that you spend more money today for food and gas utilities than you did a year ago? If you bought a home recently, has its price risen double digits over the last few years? Are you paying more in Social Security, property taxes, and sales taxes this year? Are your health care premiums going up or down or by only 4.5% as the government now reports? Have your dentist, family physician, chiropractor, or psychiatrist raised the cost of an office visit? Did your investments keep pace with inflation in 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, or 2004? Come on, guys. If you're experiencing inflation firsthand in the form of rising gas and utility bills, rising food bills, rising service costs, then why don't you own gold, silver, oil, or natural gas, foreign currencies, or commodity-related investments? Then just taking this a step further, if you have owned them, do you still own them? If you sold, why did you sell? Was it because of price? Do you believe what you hear and read in the financial and mainstream media, that inflation is low or benign? You know, we're facing a financial force 10. In summary, I'd like to end with a story from one of my life's passions, which is sailing. On August the 11th, 1979, 303 sailboats embarked on a 600-mile race from the Isle of Wight off the southwest coast of England to Fastnet Rock off the Irish coast and back. The race began with fine weather, with weathermen's forecasting ideal racing conditions. Those ideal racing conditions changed abruptly into force 10 storm winds with 60 to 70 knot winds and 40-foot waves. The storm sprang up so fast that it slammed into the sailing fleet with epic fury, scarcely giving crews time to prepare. For almost an entire day, 40-foot seas pummeled 2,500 sailors as they desperately tried to survive. And by the time the storm was over, five sailboats had sank, 24 crews had abandoned ship, resulting in the death of 15 sailors. Rescue helicopters and lifeboats struggled to save all of them. They managed to rescue 136 sailors, but were too late for the unfortunate 15 who couldn't make it. So of the 303 boats that started the race, only 85 crossed the finish line. So when an inquiry was made as to why so many sailors died, the results were surprising. Many boats did not have a barometer on board. The sailors responded that they relied strictly on weather forecasts. Hey, that sounds like today's investor listening to the financial media. The Ocean Racing and Yachting Association, making the inquiry, came to the conclusion that this storm was something special. Hey, storms usually are something special, aren't they? Most crews had sailed long-distance races before, but only a few had ever experienced a severe storm. Well, doesn't today's derivative models, which are not designed for force 10 storms, the order of the day? Well, several crews who abandoned their sailboats, believing that the risk of staying on board was much greater than getting into a much smaller lifeboat, made another fatal mistake. Today's investor, dumping their gold and silver and putting their money in paper assets that deflate and sink, doesn't seem like the logical conclusion to me. The conclusion of the race committee was as follows. In the 1979 race, the sea showed that it can be a deadly enemy and that those who go to sea for pleasure must do so in full knowledge that they may encounter dangers of the highest order. Now, storms at sea are no different than financial storms. Very few investors have the experience to navigate them safely. and like the boats without barometers that relied strictly on weather forecasts, so too are today's investors who listen to the constant sunshine forecast coming out of Wall Street. Very few have any life jackets, and much less do they have lifeboats. Those who have had a lifeboat and abandoned their boat, that is gold and silver, are going to find themselves in a similar situation as those sailors who abandoned their sailboats. They'll drift perilously in the sea of rising volatility without speed or directional control. And like this 1979 storm, fair and sunny weather in the financial markets can quickly turn into a force 10 storm. The financial barometer keeps dropping. Nobody seems to be noticing, though. Volatility levels in the VIX and the VXN are near record levels, indicating widespread investor complacency. Valuation metrics like price-to-earnings multiples, dividend yields, price-to-sales, and price-to-book ratios are all at bubble-like levels, and yet they're totally discarded. Credit and debt levels keep rising along with bubble prices in paper assets. You know, it's time to take precautionary measures. Today's leveraged economy and financial markets, along with investor complacency, are just the type of conditions where storms suddenly appear. Make sure that your safety harness is on, your lifeboat is nearby, or you're close to shore, because the barometer keeps dropping and investors are blindly unaware. The weather forecasts call for extended good weather. I say it's time to man the lifeboats. Well, there's the Kitco report, and I'd say they're just about on point and on the mark. If you've got dollar-denominated assets in the last 5 minutes here, let's start talking about the logical thing to be doing. Because with the government inflating and hyperinflating, what they're doing is eliminating their debts. You Social Security recipients are going to continue to receive your checks every month, but your checks are going to buy less and less. And if you're sitting there saying, well, I'll vote Democratic, what do you think John Kerry's going to do? You think John Kerry can stop the storm? Vote John Kerry in. Doesn't make any difference who's sitting in the White House. Economic policy is made at the Fed, not at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Fed policy is made by Alan Greenspan, not by George Bush. And the policy's already been set in cement. It's inflation. And your 3.2% cost of living index rise will not keep up with 25% a year inflation. Now, you don't get 25% inflation the same year that you put out the 25% inflated money. That follows a year or two later. And then the 30% inflation that's going on today, that doesn't show up until 2005 and 2006. And the inflation that they're projecting for the year 2005 is 50% inflation. You see, they've gone from, and just looking at the charts here, the money supply in 1992, which was $4 trillion until 1995, has now gone up from 95 to 2000 to $9 trillion. And they're going to raise it to $13 trillion. You're going to lose 269% of the value of your money by the end of 2006 or 7. 269% from 1987 to 2007. In 20 years, 269%. That's what prices are going to go up. Now, they typically go up more than that, but that's what the numbers indicate. Well, we've never seen anything like that in America since the collapse of the continental currency in 1783. Now, we've seen depressions and recessions, and we've seen money changes, but nothing like this. We're talking banana republic money, fiat currency. So now's the time to convert the fiat currency while it still has some spending power, while there's still some people out there. You be one of the 2% that goes out and cashes yours in, Because if everybody in America did it in the morning, they'd only get 2 cents on the dollar in toilet paper. So go out and get 100 cents on the dollar in toilet paper and the supplies that you need. This will be a 4-year siege, at least. And there could be more. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Won't cost you anything. And you'll learn a bunch. Let's see if you can't be one of those that makes money or salvages and saves what you need. All right. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. Thanks for listening. Good being with you. Until then, good night.